Esther Perek Zion Pusuk Hey. The king has asked Esther again, what does she want? And Esther is now being very straightforward with him and saying, there's an enemy who wants to wipe out all of my people. Tinasan li nafshi b'shei losi v'amibu v'akosha si. Hey, v'yomer ha-melech ha-chashverosh v'yomer lo-Esther ha-malka. And so King Ahasuerus said, and he said to Esther, the queen. Interesting, that double lashon over there, that he said it. Maybe he said it, he said it again. Maybe he made it clear that he was speaking to the queen. Haman, of course, is sitting there with his jaw dropping, not being able to believe what's going on. Maybe a little bit slow on the uptake, because he's been drinking too. So, mi hu zevie zehu. I always like to lay the mi hu zevie zehu. Ibn Ezra says he was mumbling. Because he feels already a little incipient guilt that maybe he has something to do with this. But who is this? And this is whom? Who is it? Who is the one? Where is the one? Who would dare to do such a thing? Hashem lo olibo la'asos kein. That it would fill his heart to do such a thing. So lo olibo, we know, unlike many narratives in Tanakh, we actually get an insight into Haman's heart. So, Mula'o Libo might also be a reference, the Mepharshim don't talk about this, but to the idea that we know what's in Haman's heart. And we know what's in every Haman's heart. It's never hard to tell what an anti-Semite has in mind. They don't camouflage it very well. And they open it out, I'm anti-Zionist. I don't hate Jewish people. Jewish people are great. Sure they are. But now, this is clear. He's been conspiring against the king, is the untold accusation. And now the reason for Haman's presence is going to be made clear. Vavatomer Esther. And so Esther said, no hesitation this time, you notice, Ish tsar v'oyev, an adversary and an enemy, a man who would be meitzar, who would cause tremendous pain to my people. And v'oyev, and an oyev to the king himself, Haman hara hazeh, this wicked Haman. And according to the Chazal, she was also trying to point a little bit at the king, that the king was equally guilty for all of this, but that a malach came and pushed her hand to point towards Haman only, because we need the king for this moment. The Haman niv as, and Haman trembles in terror, milifnei hamelech v'hamalka, before the king and the queen. His wife warned him, once you start to fall before Mordechai's people, then you have no chance. You're going to keep falling. And it's all going to fall to pieces. He's worried about the king, what the king's going to do to him. But he's also worried about the Malka. Because the Malka is the one who has pointed him out. And so, terrible things. Haman, she argues, Rav Soloveitchik says, once arms are under the control of Haman's followers, because the government's going to provide the would-be killers with ammunition. Otherwise, how are they going to wipe out and kill and annihilate the Jews? So, the king is giving weapons to Haman's Michigan militia over here. And, Esther argues, they're going to turn against the king, plunging the empire inexorably into a civil war with the man who wants to wear a crown and ride the king's horse wherever he goes. Haman is not interested in the safety of the king. He is promoting single-mindedly the cause of revolution and anarchy in his warm embrace of collectivism. He is the most dangerous enemy of the king. When she points her accusing finger at Haman and says in a loud voice, this foe, this enemy, this vicious man Haman, she meant that Haman is the adversary and enemy of the king. But of course we know he's the enemy and the adversary of the Jewish people as well. Haman did not know she was Jewish. Funny, you don't look Jewish. You're so green. Zayin v'hamelech kam b'chamasomi mishtei ha-yayin. And the king was so upset by this. And this tells us again a lot about Ahasuerush. Rather than to stay and clean up the mess that he himself has made by putting the most terrible, power-hungry, venal individual in charge of the political mechanism of the empire, and the king got up in his rage from the wine party, El Ginas Habisan, and he took a stroll. He went out to take a walk. He went out to the garden. The Haman Omad Levakesh al Nafsho Me'Esther Hamalka. And Haman got up. He stood up to beg for his life. Levakesh al nafsho, ami bevakashasi, nafshi b'she'elasi. Same phrases as Esther was using before. But now, he's going to beg for his life from Queen Esther. Ki ra'a ki chalsa elav hara'a me'es ha-melech. Because he saw, it took him long enough, he saw that The king's evil determination against him was final. So it's funny. Chol sa elav hara'a. I always, in my head, without reading carefully, translated that as the she was the source of the evil decree against him from the king. But chol sa elav hara'a, if you read the words carefully, is passive. It's not that Esther was the cause of the king's determination to punish him. It was that the determination to punish him was a fait accompli. It was a done deal. So it's funny that even at this moment, it's not Esther the Jewess the way it was Mordechai HaYehudi who has set Haman off. It's the king who is setting Haman off because he knows that's where the real danger lies. Erica Brown has a beautiful little piece on this. She says, the anger that carried the king out of the room ironically left a vacuum where his suspicions of the two he left behind could fully percolate. Now, what was his initial anger based on? The king was guilty of permitting Haman to pursue his treacherous plan in the first place. With the flurry of speed, there had been no time to sufficiently process what had occurred in the sleepless night before Haman was whisked to the second wine party. It's a mix of negative emotions felt by the king towards Haman and compassion he felt towards his new wife, and it confounded Ahasuerus. He's not good at complex emotions. He may have realized he was at the center of the scheme. He promoted an undeserving courtier. He ignored a loyal courtier, Mordechai, who saved his life. He accepted the money that made the death of a nation a petty transaction. He handed over his signet ring. Self-loathing for a powerful and insecure man caused emotional combustion. He may have been angry at himself, angry at his minister who manipulated him, angry at a Persian system of law that was overly rigid. He projected everything onto Haman. The king may have left not because he could not stand or literally share space with Haman, but because he could not stand himself, fury laced with shame. That's a really interesting psychological observation about Ahasuerus, that he is not accustomed to self-reflection, and when he has to, he has a very hard time coping with it. So Ahasuerus gets up and takes a walk, only setting the stage for Haman to stand up to go over to Esther Hamalka. Does Haman have any underlying fantasy of attacking her, of abusing her, of forcing himself on her? Doubtful, not at this moment when he's feeling at his most weak. But that's how it's going to look when he is going to take a tumble.